A long time ago, in a VCR far, far away on the island of Puerto Rico, a young boy discovers the magic of Star Wars. And in Chicago, another young boy decides that one day he will walk out on the best thing that ever happened to him so that he could be knocked unconscious in an octagon.
Bam, ba-da-ba-da-bam, ba-da-da-ba-da-bam. Bam, 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 bam,
welcome to the Cyan and Rican podcast. I am one of your hosts, Cyan of Flame.
And I am apparently Star Wars musician, Sarhad Regan.
You love the Star Wars.
I do.
You grew up on it. So your first experience with it was VHS. You watched it on VCR.
Right. My first experience was actually watching it at VHS back when, you know, VHS was all we had. I think Laserdiscs, I don't know if they existed or if they were very rare. Like, it was hard to get them. They were expensive. So my first experience was strictly episode. I actually watched Empire Strikes Back the first. That was the first one I ever saw. I never saw A New Hope until way later. I had a book, like a big old fold out, like those big picture books they had back in the day when it was just like photography for the movie. And that's all I had. That was how I was introduced to Star Wars A New Hope. Empire was the actual first movie I saw and enjoyed.
Interesting. I first saw the first Star Wars. My family got the VHS for A New Hope. And I think on this VHS run, it just said Star Wars. It didn't even say A New Hope on it.
Right. It was before they even officialized. Yeah, before they retitled and reofficialized the episode numeration.
So it just said Star Wars on it. And I distinctly also remember it said on the box, in breathtaking high definition, which is hilarious because
right.
VHS.
Yeah. Hi-fi, that was the thing in the '80s.
High fidelity.
That was their thing.
Yeah, the stunning quality of VHS where you could hit pause on any screen to see a shaking image.
And this was before THX was even a thing. This is before the special editions and all that came. I mean, this is when it was pure, I guess, as pure as it was.
Yeah, I mean, I did get to see Han shoot first. And
right, yeah, he didn't dodge.
But I've never been the biggest Star Wars fan, but I do like Star Wars. I've watched the movies. I've enjoyed each one of them for what they are. But you're definitely the Star Wars aficionado, isn't that right?
Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure after I saw Empire, it was kind of like this. I didn't really understand what I was watching because I was only six, right? All I knew is that there was a really good story being told and that there was, you know, swords made out of light. Like, that was the one thing I walked out of this. I was like, there's swords made out of light. Like, I need more of this. And then, you know, Return of the Jedi came out and I was able to enjoy it more since I had context. And then finally, after I saw Empire and Return, I went back and saw A New Hope, and then eventually I watched it in order, and I was able to appreciate the story better when I was 9, 10-ish. That's when I got it, when I understood the story. And ever since then, I've been a fan of, like, the Star Wars lore, the books, comics, video games, you name it. If it's Star Wars, I'm probably going to at least watch it or give it a chance.
See, for me, Star Wars, it was just like I watched the first one multiple times. First one being 4. Tons and tons of times. The rest of them I've seen between 1 and 3 times, and that's it.
Right.
I saw episode 1, Phantom Menace, 1 time in theaters. That's the only time I've ever seen it.
So just once?
It's the very first time that it came out. The only time I saw it. And, like, I left and I thought some things were really cool about it. I've never watched it again.
Some things were just horrible, like Jar Jar.
You see, the Jar Jar stuff, like, never bothered me because I only watched it the once. The one that stuck with me was that big blue fly, like, slave owner. And I hated him.
The Toy Darin. And I mean, you're supposed to hate him. He's a slave driver.
Well, of course, but
he's obviously a heel.
But what made me love that one and make me not able to hate the prequels, like, a lot of people just threw a lot of hate on the prequels right then, mm-hmm. like, even people my age group, because they would watch it more than I did.
Right.
Was a little game came out for the Nintendo 64 called Star Wars Pod Racing.
Right.
This was, like, the greatest racing game ever to come out at this time. Like, I'm hoping that it gets, like, some miraculous, like, remake for, like, Wii U or something.
Or re-release of sorts.
Exactly. Like, Star Wars Pod Racing was incredibly fun. And it was one of, like, three games that I had for my 64. So it just had, like, one of those, like...
So-
special places in my heart from
right. You played quite a bit of this game.
Exactly, like a lot of racing. So I'm always like, pod racing is sweet. How can you not like the prequels?
Right.
that's
the thing. I remember the one thing most people agreed on. If Phantom Menace was a shit movie, which I think we can all agree that it's as far as all the in the Star Wars pantheon of movies, it's the worst one. Like no one will ever tell you that any of the other ones is worse. Like, people generally tend to warm up to Attack of the Clones, and most people dig Revenge of the Sith.
It's my favorite one.
Yeah, like, because it's not a bad movie. Like, it's horribly acted, but it's not, like, a bad story. It's, like, a good story with horrible actors. Like, that's the only problem. Whereas Phantom Menace was just a horrible story, horribly acted. It had good actors, but they just couldn't, you know, George Lucas couldn't direct... Couldn't drag good acting out of a wet paper bag. And the one thing that people really enjoyed about the episode one was A, the pod race scene. Cause I remember when it first came out, people compared it to the race in Ben-Hur, I want to say. People were comparing it to that, the chariot race.
Wow.
Like critics were saying that this was the new chariot race from Ben-Hur. Like this was like the new version. And I was like, that's really high praise for, like, a movie that's horrible, but it has, like, a really well-made scene.
So, and how old were you when you saw Phantom Menace?
Phantom Menace came out, what, in 1999?
I think so.
So I was 18. Like, I was all in. And at this point, I had seen the original movies, like, way too many times. I was already... reading into the expanded universe. I had played, you know, games like on N64, Super Nintendo, PC, anything that was Star Wars, I was taking in. So I was ready for this movie. I was beyond hype for episode one, and I was so disappointed. Like, the only thing that saved that movie for me was the end duel with Darth Maul. That whole scene, the choreography, the music, the weaving in and out of all the different stories while the duel was happening, that was the only reason why I owned that movie. Otherwise, I wouldn't own that movie.
You see, that's funny. So, you were saying earlier that, like, one's the worst one and everything.
Right.
And, to me, it's not. I like one. I do. I mean, it's not as good as a lot of the other ones. Three's my favorite. I think the worst one would be Attack of the Clones. I thought that
you
one
think that,
the one that
okay
that dragged
I can
too
see
long.
I can see that, yeah. Yeah, it was a little too long. And I think the only reason I like Attack of the Clones, and again this goes back to me really liking the Star Wars universe and wanting to know certain things. And so nostalgia obviously affected my judgment for Attack of the Clones more so than it did for Phantom Menace. When Attack of the Clones was announced and I saw it, the reason why I still enjoy it and liked it was because ever since I saw Star Wars Episode 4, when I first saw it, or when I saw it and understood it and knew the context, I was always like, what are they talking about the Clone Wars? When Leia says, you know, that the famous message, she's like, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope, and you know, you helped my father during the Clone Wars. And I was like, what's a Clone War? And for the longest time, even in the expanded universe and video games, they never touched on that time period. It was always like this weird mystery that George Lucas did not want no one touching.
It was like, no one could century type thing.
Yeah, like, yeah. It was like, no one could talk about this. Like, the books alluded to it, but no one could talk about it. And suddenly, here it was. Here was, and then it tied with Boba Fett, and Boba Fett was like everyone's favorite character that never did anything. Like, he never did anything in the movies. He just looked cool and had a really shitty death scene, you know, like it was almost like comical. But then you go back and there's his story about him and his dad, and there's all this, like, you know, he was the product of the, like, he's the reason why clone troopers existed, and there was this big war, and you're like, oh my god, like there's this whole thing that they never mentioned, like, or they mentioned but they never had expanded upon. And that's why I actually enjoyed that one, because Phantom Menace, nothing that happens in Phantom Menace is ever mentioned in any future movie. Like, or even in the older movies. Nothing that happened there is mentioned.
Mm.
Yeah, think
was
about...
Was it Amidala's ascension to the throne and all that?
Nope. Never mentioned. Never mentioned. Yeah. The events of Phantom Menace, you can completely not watch that movie, because the original trilogy never mentioned Qui-Gon. They never mentioned Darth Maul.
That's true. Yeah.
They never mentioned that Anakin / Darth Vader was from Tatooine originally. Like, they never mentioned the pod race. Like, books have retroactively gone over the events that happened, but when the original trilogy came out and Phantom Menace came out, nothing that happened in that movie was ever alluded to. Attack of the Clones was alluded to, and I think that's what people accepted it more. Because it was something like, oh shit, the Clone Wars. Like, we know what that is. We don't know what happens, but we know what that is.
Interesting. So, we're talking about Star Wars right now, because this year, in 2015, we'll be seeing a brand new Star Wars movie. The first Disney-presented Star Wars, and it's already getting tons and tons of exposure. In the first weekend that the trailer debuted, it had more downloads than any other trailer the entire year.
Aren't they already at like 50-something million hits on YouTube?
Tons. Like,
if not more.
If not more, for sure.
Yeah, and mind you, this is a teaser that's what, not even a minute long? Or like a minute and some odd change, maybe five scenes in it? Like five actual scenes, and that's it. Like, there's not a whole lot going on, but
literally
so
just a trailer of people jumping on the screen and then running away. Like,
yeah, like reaction shots. It's a lot of it almost feels like, you know,
reaction shots.
Yeah, like reaction shots. You see, like, someone's scared, someone's hurrying somewhere, someone is driving. Actually, the one where he's on the X-Wing, he looks angry. Like, he looks like something's happening with that guy. Then the Sith that comes out with the cross guard, which was a fucking shitstorm on the internet. And then, what was the last shot, the money shot, the Millennium Falcon on Tatooine. Like, people losing their minds over this trailer, even though it's not that long. And they don't really show anything of the story. They just show, it's like a sneak peek. But people just want more of it.
That crossbar lightsaber, though, man.
Yeah.
That's
like,
pretty
I remember,
cool.
Yeah, I remember when the trailer for Phantom Menace came out, I remember there was a scene. Like, it was like, here's your trailer, right? And, you know, the guy's talking like a new Star Wars for the new generation, blah, blah, blah. And he goes through all the scenes and whatever. And they show Darth Maul doing the dual-bladed lightsaber. And people just lost their minds. In a good way. Like, they were just like, oh my god, that is the coolest thing. And that's all people could talk about until the movie came out. And here we have a similar problem, except it's people not understanding the crossguard. And, like, why is it like that? Like, we've become so cynical, especially after the prequels, that we can't even, like, enjoy something that looks cool.
Yeah, this is why we can't have nice things.
Pretty much.
I actually think that it looks pretty cool. Like, like, I'm scared for the guy using it, that, like, he's going to grip too close and cut off his own fingers. But, I mean, that it's on him to be good.
Far worse things have happened to lightsaber handlers in the Star Wars universe. So a couple of fingers, I would count my blessings.
Don't we have like a 100% hand mortality rate for everybody who holds a lightsaber? Like,
yeah, every other person that has held a lightsaber has gotten a limb chopped off or you know, some type of incision, you know, by the, you know, arm, hand, leg area.
If you have a lightsaber, you're eventually going to get cut.
Like, yeah, I think Obi-Wan's the only one who's never gotten, like, chopped up. Like,
oh, yeah, because he just went straight into
vanished.
The Force.
Yeah, yeah, he became one with the Force. Like, he's the only one in the movies who was like, nah, I'm good.
He was like, nope.
Everyone else has gotten, like, a limb chopped off. Actually, the Emperor's the other one. Emperor somehow managed to not get cut up. So, good on him.
He did get force reflected so that his, like, face melted into a puddle of goo, though.
Yeah. And I do think the reason why people are hyped about this movie, I think there's multiple reasons. One, some people are scared about the Disney thing. I'm not, because Disney bought Marvel, and ever since they bought Marvel, they've been giving us great movies. So, I'm good. And then, the fact that this is the first time Lucas is not involved with Star Wars makes me happy, because I think anyone who's listening to this, and anyone who's followed Star Wars for more than, like, one or two movies, knows that the worst enemy that Star Wars has had has been its own creator, George Lucas. Like, he's been the worst thing for the franchise. So it's kind of nice to have him, you know, sit back and just be, like, an observer instead of someone who's going to craft this thing.
I think J.J. Abrams is a great choice. I love what he did with Star Trek. I've liked a lot of his other movies, as a matter of fact, just in general. I'm a fan of him as a filmmaker. His TV shows hasn't really resonated with me as much, but in fairness, like, he's just kind of executive producer and, like,
yeah, he doesn't
set
have
things up. Like, he's not, like, directing each episode.
Yeah. Yeah, he's only directed, like, a handful of episodes on his series. Like, I know Lost, he's only directed, like, two episodes, I think.
Oh, was Abrams a major guy on Lost?
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was just Damon Lindelof.
No, Lost was his baby. If you look at the original Lost, like, season one, that's a J.J. Abrams story. And I think he directed one or two episodes. Yeah, that's a J.J. Abrams show. Damon Lindelof took over when J.J. had to, you know, do every other movie. Yeah, like, because I think when Lost started, I think was when he started becoming, you know, having notoriety in Hollywood, and I think it was a little bit like 2 years before Star Trek came out, so the negotiations had already started, I believe.
Huh, crazy.
Yeah. So, but yeah, Lost is J.J. Abrams' creation. He didn't finish it, but he definitely started it.
J.J. Abrams, I do like him. He's a good filmmaker. People can, you know, complain about lens flares or whatever, but I think they all look pretty cool. And
yeah, I don't understand that. Like, I really never got that lens flare. Like, I see it. Like, I've seen him use it, but I don't think he uses it any more than anyone. Like, I don't get the lens flare thing. I really don't.
I mean, the most important thing is that it's a well-crafted movie and it's a well-acted movie. So as long as the end result is good, it's going to be good for everyone all around.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, John Boyega, he was announced as being a major star in the movie. Mm-hmm. He's actually the first face you saw. He pops up.
Yeah, Flint, I believe, is his name in the story.
They announced his actual name.
Yeah, the names were announced. It's Flint or Flynn, I can't remember, and he's wearing a Stormtrooper outfit, which was another reason people lost their fucking minds.
Flint Skywalker, maybe?
No, last name. No last name.
No, I'm saying maybe.
Here's where we're gonna open a can of worms. So the expanded universe has, like, these stories that happen after Star Wars ended. Like, Episode 6 happened, right? They're an Ewok, they're celebrating the Empire, they defeated them, the second Death Star is destroyed, whatever. There's, like, 60 years of story that has happened, like, in the expanded universe, mind you. So this is not, like, a spoiler, because they're not doing this. Like, they're either omitting it, or they're gonna do their own continuity.
These have all been, like, waved off as, like, former continuity. Right.
This was former continuity. They actually, I think the comics and the books are, they're going to put a stamp on them as, and it's going to have a name. The old continuity is going to be called Legacy or something.
Yes, Legacy.
And yeah, like, and the books, it's going to be.
Books are already coming in with this new stamp.
Mm-hmm. And it says Star Wars Legacy.
And Dark Horse had a big thing going right up until December 31st, because 2015 they officially lost all license back to Marvel for Star Wars. And right up until the 31st, it was like, this is the last chance that you can buy Star Wars from Dark Horse. Like, then they're going to be gone.
Yeah. So basically, this continuity is being... they're not quite getting rid of it, but all these things happen. Like, Han Solo and Leia got married, which I'm sure is going to happen in this continuity, too. Luke had a kid. Like, and, like, the Solos had their own kids. They had two twins and a kid called Anakin Solo. One of them became a Darth. You know, the other one died horribly. Like, there's this whole arc. I mean, like, Ben, I think... The last time I looked at Ben, I think he's already like 20 years old, and like Luke is like 60 something. So I mean, like, Luke is the Grand Master of the Jedi Order. Like, there's this whole story like that they've progressed to this point that might not happen. Actually, it won't, because all these characters, like Flynn, I can't remember the name of the girl. Like, all these characters, no one's ever heard of them. Like, there's no Star Wars stories with them. So this is all going to be new. Which is going to be a tough pill to swallow for a lot of people who like the books and like the continuity that was established. But there was always this rule that if George Lucas didn't make a movie of it or an animated series, it never happened. That's always been an official rule, like, on the Star Wars continuity. So, c'est la vie, right?
Absolutely. But, I mean, I think I would be really excited to see... that Flint is, you know, even if he's not like Luke or Leia's, you know, son or something like that, that he would be a new Jedi or something and everything.
I'm hoping he is.
I think he will be. And
I'm hoping that him and the girl are Jedi.
Exciting thing. Have the front and center, new Jedis, all sorts of things, like kind of moving the Force forward and everything, having the Force awaken.
Yeah, I think, yeah, and it happened in the Expanded Universe, and I like the title. Like, at first people were making fun of it, The Force Awakens, what does that mean? And it's like, well, in the first trilogy, there was a whole bunch of Jedi and a fair number of Sith just running around. Then you get to the episodes 4 through 6, there's, what, 4 Jedi total? And, like, 2 Sith? That's it. That's your whole... That's the only Force users in the entire universe.
I have a theory on it, and it's not a good one because I'm not a big fan, but...
Okay.
Basically, Anakin, Darth Vader,
mm-hmm.
he was like the Immaculate Conception, right? Like, he was just created by the Force, right?
Yes.
Pure Force?
He was the chosen one. Like, he was the child of prophecy, the chosen one.
So, like, when he died... Mm-hmm. And like, he would become one with the Force again, so the Force would get all that energy back. Wouldn't that be what woke it up? Like, all the energy of Vader, like, returning to the universe?
It could be, because, I mean, he was, like, arguably one of the strongest Jedi that ever lived. Like, they've always said that Vader, the reason why all these Jedi died, and, you know, there was only 2 Sith, is because Vader pretty much just hunted everyone down, and he was so superior to everyone. And he had, like, this, you know, giant empire army behind him that he just destroyed everything in his path. Like, there's been books and comics, and I think the Force Unleashed video game touched on it, like, how his campaign to pretty much end any Jedi that ever existed.
Well, they even said in the first movie that Darth Vader killed Luke Skywalker's father.
Right, which was really a play of, a play of words there. Because the way of the Sith is that when you become a Sith, you cease being the person you were before. That's why they take a name Darth Vader, Darth Sidious, you know, Darth Tyrannus, Darth Maul, etc. Like, Darth Maul, that's not his name. He has, like, a completely different identity before he was Darth Maul.
Yeah, because Count Dooku was Darth Tyrannus.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Both silly names, if you ask me, but, you know, that's the nature of Lucas.
Well, I mean,
like when the last one of the later Darth people that were important was Jason Solo, who's the eldest of the twins that Han Solo and Princess Leia had, and he was Jason Solo, but when he became Darth, he was Darth Caedus. And that was actually a fanpick name. Caedus, yeah. It's a, I can't, C-A-E-D-U-S, Caedus, Caedus. It's a weird name. It was picked by the fans, actually. They did a poll, and the fans voted for that name. Like, that was the name that the fans picked.
Interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm looking forward to the movie. Like, I'm glad that they're not doing everything on green screen. You know, they're doing puppets again. They're keeping it. They're trying to bring it back to what it was in the original trilogy.
Only possible because of the fact that Disney owns them. Because Disney, you know, they brought back the Muppet Studios. They brought back the Jim Henson Studio. I mean,
right? Yeah.
Two hugely successful Muppet movies. They're able to do these, you know, high quality puppets again because of that.
Yeah.
Because they're with Disney. Because they're with the Jim Henson Studios. So that opens up a lot of doors, and that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and you know, John Williams is back with the music, and if you've ever, you know, all the Star Wars movies had John Williams for the music. Hell, even some of the games had, like, if they didn't have John Williams, they had someone emulating John Williams.
I think Danny Elfman did like some emulation on a few of them.
So I mean, it's just all the pieces are together for the movie to be good. Oh, I forgot. And the biggest thing is that Lawrence Kasdan is the guy writing the movie. All three movies that are going to come out, episodes 7, 8, and 9, are written by Lawrence Kasdan. If you don't know that name.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's what I was going to ask is
who. Yeah, Lawrence Kasdan was the guy who wrote both Empire Strikes Back and Indiana Jones Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh.
So he's like the guy from that period that, you know, could kind of guide George Lucas through a good script. Like, and, you know, most people would argue that Empire Strikes Back was the best Star Wars movie, and he's the guy who wrote it, and he's rewriting this with J.J. Abrams. So there's no reason why this movie should be bad. There's no reason whatsoever. Like, if it fails, I'll be very surprised.
Now, along with that, so the movie poised to be a huge success. A lot of people are really excited for it. It's got some really cool people working on it. Marvel, being also owned by Disney, has regained the license. They regained it from Dark Horse, who had it for years and years. Marvel actually had the license about 30 years ago as well. What I think is interesting is the new Star Wars lineup is actually going to be set in the original trilogy timeline. So
right. It
takes place kind of between 4 and 5, I think is what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and because
is the time frame for it?
Yeah, between 4 and 5, there's not a whole lot of books and or comics. There's a couple, you know, there's maybe 5 or 10 books, maybe a couple of comics, but there's not a whole lot of material that emanated from between those two eras. And I mean, a lot of stuff must have happened between those two, like how did they wind up in Hoth, you know, after they destroyed the Death Star? Like, who, you know, how did Darth Vader go from, well, I think they might have covered some storylines, but they haven't covered the entirety of it. And Marvel's getting it back, so, I mean, I'm not complaining.
Yeah, and, I mean, they're putting some top-level people on it. Jason Aaron's going to be writing it. He wrote the original Sin crossover. He wrote Thor, God of Thunder. He's writing the current Thor, wherein a woman is taking up the hammer.
Oh, that's right.
Tons of other fantastic comics. He's going to be writing the main Star Wars book. He's going to be having the art done by John Cassaday. And Cassaday did a, you know, huge run on X-Men with Joss Whedon. He did the opening arc for Uncanny Avengers.
Is John Cassaday the one who did the Astonishing X-Men?
He did the Astonishing X-Men and Uncanny Avengers.
Okay, so I do, okay, I know. Yeah, I like his art then.
Yeah, he's a very good artist and everything. Very detailed. Mm-hmm. But this announcement, it coming home to Marvel, getting a big release, it's going to be set in that time frame that, like, everybody loves. So, like, you're going to be able to see Luke Young and Han Young and Vader, like all the, you know, things that you think of when you think of Star Wars are going to be available in this one.
Right. The height, you know, the height of the Star Wars like eras.
Exactly. Is going to be in this comic, and it's got over 1 million orders for this comic book.
Now, you and I have talked about this, but I want you to put this in, like, context. Like, what does 1 million copies mean
in comics? 1 million copies of a comic is enormous.
For one issue.
Enormous. Okay. So, just issue one of Star Wars having 1 million copies going out there means it is about twice as successful as the second best selling comic of the last 15 years.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, the Amazing Spider-Man number 1 came out with the relaunch, Peter Parker returning to being Spider-Man.
Right.
Came out mid last year, and it did 587,000 copies.
Mm-hmm.
A little over half a mil.
Okay. And again, this is Spider-Man, who's like the most popular Marvel comic in their lineup.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then the second best-selling comic of the last 15 years is Spider-Man 583, which had the alternate cover with Barack Obama for Barack Obama being sworn in as president.
Right.
That one did like 523,000.
So
like a little over 5K. So these are huge, huge event comics that sold tons and tons and tons, and that's over their whole lifetime, like reprints and everything. This is just initial orders hitting a million.
1 million, yeah. So it's, I'm assuming that this is like a sobering number to see.
Every comic shop across the country is going to have this book, like, so that they can sell it.
Right.
This is a huge amount, and I mean, lots of stuff is being poured onto this, and,
now,
and they're putting a lot into it.
Now, I wanted to touch on something, because I know, so Dark Horse has had the Star Wars franchise. Like, they've been able to do comics for Star Wars. They've done both the time period of episodes 4 through 6. I think they've done prequel work. I'm pretty sure they've done the prequel work. And I know they've done stuff after. Like, they had the Star Wars Legacy, or whatever it was called. You know, it's like 100-some-odd years after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was their highest, do you know, like, what their highest selling?
The best Dark Horse did with Star Wars. In contemporary times. They mm-hmm. did really well, you know, in, like, the 90s boom.
Right.
Especially around when Phantom Menace came out and everything.
That's right, and
when they did their best.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be in 2010 or 11. They launched issue number 1 of a brand new series just titled Star Wars, and it was set much like this one during the main lineup and everything. So you would still have Vader, you would still have Yoda, and
right, Luke, the more recognizable Star Wars.
Exactly. So they did a brand new series. They put a big author on it, Brian Wood, and everything, who's, you know, somewhat comparable to a Jason Aaron and everything, and some big artists on it, and it came out and sold 80,000 copies.
Yikes. So you had the Star Wars brand name, which by itself should carry. Then you had Dark Horse, who at the time, this was in the 90s, you said?
No, this was 2010, 2011.
So this was the more recent one. That,
yeah.
That's the highest they got was 80-something thousand.
Yeah, 80-something thousand.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
Far less.
Now, can you, again, context. What's a comic, like, what's a Marvel comic that gets 80,000, like, on average? Like, I want to compare, like, what's
X-Men?
Marvel's. So, okay, so it's the equivalent to X-Men.
Probably, like, all new X-Men in, like, middle issues and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Uncanny X-Men. Probably hitting about 80,000 on average.
Right. So, yeah. So it seems, but so that, basically, them coming back to
one.
So them coming back to Marvel.
They dropped down significantly on future issues for that.
Right. So. Yeah, and we were going to just mention that, like, there's always a drop-off in comics, like, 50, 80%, you know, drops. So, like, you know, your 500,000 becomes, like, 200,000. 100-something thousand, right, for the next issue.
Exactly.
And then it kind of hovers around that area. So if Star Wars drops 50%, that's still 500,000 comics that they would be selling per issue.
That's still another top 10, like...
That's still double what Spider-Man is doing, right?
Yeah.
Like, that is enormous. That's, like, I can't even think about... And again, this is just the pre-orders. Like, Lord knows what's going to happen on day one. Like, if more people are going to come in going like, oh, yeah, Star Wars, I'll get that.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's still going to be the trade around. So the first trade is going to come out right when the movie does.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be able to collect, you know, the first six issues or so right along with the movie. So that's, you know, just complete synergy.
Movie comes out issue one comes out again, I'm sure it's going to, like, re-explode.
Absolutely. And I mean, it should. I mean, they're putting some big deals on it, and they've got tons of really cool variant covers. They've got, you know, the standard art cover. They've got a joke cover where Jaxer, it's like Marvel's bunny in space that was kind of like a joke about Star Wars.
Yeah.
Is, like, trying to get into the Star Wars thing, and they're holding him out. They've got, like, Stan Sakai did a variant cover where Vader's force-choking Yoda while being attacked by, like, a giant space lizard.
Mm-hmm.
That one was really cool. Lots of different things going out there. So there's a bunch of different covers, which allows them to kind of up the number.
So
they're selling all these covers.
So basically, with the way the movie is looking, as far as, like, the hype for it and how people are interested and, you know, what it might do to the box office... And now with the comic, these are pre-order numbers, right? Is that what this is?
Yes.
The 1 million?
Yeah.
So the pre-order numbers, already a success, basically, if people actually go and pick it up.
Yeah, it comes out January 14th. And, I mean, January is actually a pretty good time for something to launch anyways.
Right. It's right between, you know, Christmas and Valentine's Day. People are like, eh.
Well, you got that lull, and movies are, like, the worst movies.
Yeah, come on, in January.
January.
Yeah, like, so, December's a good... When did December become such a good month for movies? Like,
when the Lord of the Rings movies started coming
out. Yeah, right? It seems like ever since Lord of the Rings, then we had, you know, Harry Potter would come during December, then The Hobbit started coming out, and now we're going to have Star Wars coming out December. They're not even... Which is strange to me, because I'm pretty sure Star Wars was a summer movie. All the other ones, I'm pretty sure they were summer movies.
I know all came out in Julys, I believe, but...
Well, didn't a couple of them come out in... Or maybe it was the last two.
I think the last two came out July and December, because they did that two-movie thing.
That's right. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking of, yeah. When they split the last movie, which is all the rage, splitting the last chapter.
Yeah, Mockingjay just did that, actually.
Yeah, Mockingjay did it. Hobbit sprawled their movie into three movies for no reason, but whatever.
Twilight.
Then Twilight did it. Harry Potter did it. Avengers is going to do it with the Infinity War.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, Infinity War is going to be two. I mean, they're splitting it into halves. And there's another movie.
In fairness, I think the Infinity War being split into two movies... is going to work more organically rather than being an unfinished thing, because I think we're going to have one specific villain for Infinity War Part 1, and then one specific villain for Infinity War Part 2.
So you don't think it's going to be all Thanos?
Well, it's a war. Like, there's going to be more than one villain. Like,
No, I know there's going to be, like, you know, henchmen or whatever, but he's still, like, the big bad.
Well, Thanos will be looming, but, like, I think you got to save Thanos for the big finale. Like,
Right. Oh, yeah. He's
going to come into action in Infinity War Part 2.
Right. Or at least come and just wreck everyone in Infinity War 1, and just kind of the ending would be like, oh, man, like, are they going to make it? And then we have to wait, like, a year until... We figure out, like, how did they survive or whatever.
Because, I mean, he's... crossover.
What's that?
I said that big Star Wars crossover. It's like, Infinity Wars Part 2 is Star Wars Part
2. Lightsabers for no reason. Suddenly Vader. No.
They use the time crystal, they bring that back to life.
So. I'm hoping. I think me and you had a conversation about, like, the different universes, you know, all the Infinity War and all that stuff. And what if now that Disney and in turn Marvel own Star Wars, so what if they could just wedge that universe in there somewhere? Like, it exists within the Marvel continuity. Because, I mean, they already did it with, who was it? The character from Spawn that did that?
Oh, Angela?
Angela, yeah. Angela was a character from Spawn in a completely different publishing company, and then she came over from some type of business deal. And, like, she's part of the Marvel universe now.
Yeah, she originally came out and was an angel in Spawn. Came out in issue 9, I think, of Spawn.
Mm-hmm.
Was an angel, fought, did this big character arc, and then lots of legal issues ensued over who actually owned the rights to the Angela character. And it turned out Neil Gaiman won and was the true creator. And he did a deal with Marvel where it's like, hey, I've got this angel that was in Spawn. Do you want to do anything with that? And she joined the Guardians of the Galaxy. And
that's pretty awesome.
and teams up with them, and then is revealed that she's actually the sister of Thor. The, like, blood sister of Thor.
Really?
She's an Odin child.
I did not know that.
Yeah. They just released the first issue of her own series. It's called Angela. Asgard's Assassin.
I was wondering what was the deal. I seen the cover where she's standing there with her sword or whatever.
It's a really good issue, by the way.
Yeah, I remember seeing it. I was going to ask you, like, at a later time, but I guess, you know, since we're mentioning the bleeding into the Marvel Universe, I was wondering what that was all about. Like, why is she in Asgard? Like, what's that all about? And never mind, spoiler alert.
Yeah, she's Thor's sister. It's pretty awesome. So, I mean, like, maybe we'll get something that, you know, the Skywalkers are actually, like, a descendant of Peter Parker. And
right. Well, they have
years
to.
Years down the line. Oh, no, wait. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, I was just talking to a friend about that. Star Wars.
I always forget that. It's not
Star Wars is a story from the past. Like, we're living, like, what happened in Star Wars happened before, you know, Earth. this was, I guess, millions of years ago or thousands of years ago, because the Star Wars continuity already has 4,000 years, I think, of story. So, yeah. So at least 4,000 years ago, or longer than that, I should say. Sure. So there is that.
Yeah. So, Star Wars, crazy popular, crazy cool stuff. Lots of things going on with that. But we had a second subject. There's a reason that this is the punk wars that we spoke of. We spoke of that man in Chicago.
The man in Chicago. CM Punk. It all comes back to wrestling, ladies and gentlemen. It always does.
He made some waves. He walked out on the company. He left WWE. He was frustrated. And then they fired him for walking out. And he did a tell-all on a podcast. And I talked about how he felt, how he was, you know, how he felt mistreated, and that, you know, certain people were unprofessional, and he just couldn't stand being in that environment anymore.
Right. And he wasn't happy doing his job, basically.
Exactly.
Well, it was what it boiled down to was, like, he was not happy doing something that he always thought was going to make him happy.
Yeah, which, you know, sucks. I mean,
yeah,
when you lose that lust for,
especially in a business like wrestling, where it's very much like about your performance. Like, you know, you have to go out there with some type of energy to want to do that job, you know, that performance. And if he didn't want to be there, then, I mean, it was just gonna wind up hurting someone. It was gonna wind up, the fans were gonna notice. I mean, we could all notice towards, like, the last 3-4 months in the company, you could just tell that he was not. Like, he was not there. Like, you could tell when he started with WWE, even during his ECW stint, and even when he did the Best in the World, the 404-odd days that he was champion?
434 days.
434 days, there you go. And you could tell that he was having fun doing it. Those last 4 months, I just recently, on the network, I started watching some of those pay-per-views. he looks fucking miserable. Like, absolutely miserable. Mm-hmm. So, you could tell. Now, what he did, and before you say what he did you ever think, besides the Marvel thing, which again, it comes back to Marvel sometimes, besides the Marvel gig that they offered him, writing for Thor, and, you know, I think he's doing something for DC Comics as a writer, did you ever think in a million years he was going to do what he announced that he's going to do?
No. I was completely surprised by it. I mean, he comes out, he's announcing that he's going to be a writer on the Thor annual. He's going to have a story in the Thor annual.
Mm-hmm.
Telling about, like, young Thor and everything, and so it's like, okay, wrestler CM Punk is going to be writing a comic. All right, okay.
Yeah, strange.
And then it's like, oh, wrestler CM Punk's, you know, also writing something for Vertigo and everything. And
Vertigo, that's right, yeah.
Which is a DC Comics imprint, and mm-hmm. some sort of, like, sports stories collection quarterly.
It's kind of like the Twilight Zone of sports, from what I was like, from what I glanced. Like, I'm not sure.
It was like creepy supernatural stuff with a sports setting. Like,
right, exactly. Which like I'm okay with.
You're kind of dipping your toes into too many different pools there.
Yeah, but will he be able to perform? Like, I'm honestly, you know, as much as a big CM Punk fan that I am, can he do this?
Ultimately, the book needs to be good still, right?
Right, exactly.
You can only buy so many issues of something before, like, Chris Jericho wouldn't get 3 books if he was a bad writer type thing.
Right, exactly.
That's why Kurt Angle only got 1 book, because he wasn't a good writer.
you have to do what you're good at.
Exactly. We hear these announcements, and we're kind of like, okay, well, CM Punk, he's just going to write comics. Like, he's got enough money that, you know, intelligently he would never have to work again or whatever, but he's just going to write comics here and there. Good for him. That's cool. And then out of the blue, at a UFC pay-per-view, he announces he is going to be fighting for Ultimate Fighting Championship. Were you completely blindsided?
I was, okay, so I'll tell you, I'm going to tell you exactly how this went down. I'm sitting at home, I was watching something, I can't remember, I'm pretty sure I was catching up to NXT or reviewing something from the WWE Network. Like, I think I might have been watching the Paul Heyman pay-per-view, or the documentary, because I finally saw it, which was great. Anyway,
it was really
I'm good. Sitting there, and my Facebook has CM Punk stuff. And I'm watching, and I was like, CM Punk, like, what is he, like, he just did the podcast. And I think it was the week when McMahon did the podcast with Stone Cold and had the conversations about what, you know, what happened with Punk and this and that.
Millennials.
And then suddenly, I'm like, wait, this is a new thing. There's a video clip. I press it, and it's him at UFC talking to, I can't remember, was it Joe Rogan that he was talking to?
I don't think it was Rogan, I think it was a different interviewer.
Random announcer, interviewer, and he does the, you know, I'm coming to UFC, you know, I'm doing this, and I was like, what is he talking about? And then they do, you know, the press release and everything, and Dana White is with him, and they're talking, and I was like, wait, what? Like, he's doing MMA, what? Now, I know he has some, he's trained with the Gracies, I know he has some jiu-jitsu, but he has no MMA record, he has no MMA experience, he's never, to my knowledge, he's never fought a person in real life, other than like one or two people that he's like fucking punched in the face, like the one fan at the Raw event where he just like decked him. I don't understand where this came from. Like, I have no idea where this came from. Like, did he ever have any interest in MMA? Because I sure as hell didn't think he had.
And yeah, it wasn't like, I mean, kind of a bad example. I mean, but like Undertaker and Stone Cold, like neither of them, you're never going to see him in a UFC fight because UFC only got big like years after they could have, like, legitimately competed in it.
Right, like, they like it, because I know Undertaker's a huge MMA fan.
Huge,
like,
huge MMA fans.
But he'll never, I don't think he'll ever get in there.
They're always involved with UFC, like, they're always watching fights and everything, mm-hmm. like, talking about it actively.
Right.
You never saw CM Punk, like, at those shows, really.
Yeah, or even talking about it.
and everything, like, CM Punk was always talking about comics and, like, random stuff and everything, or, like, this is what I'm reading, and it'll be a comic book. So when he was like, oh, I'm going to be working in comics, it's like, ah, you bastard, but...
Like, ooh, like the comic like, thing made like, sense, because that makes he's...
sense.
Yeah, I mean, he's always on his Twitter, you always saw him posting pictures of what comic he was reading, or what book he was reading, or what artist he liked, or, you know, like, he was, you know, like, even him going to the ring. It's clobbering time, obviously, a Marvel fanboy. That, so him becoming a comic book writer, even if it's for one thing, or, like, small gigs, it made sense. Him going to UFC as an MMA fighter makes no sense to me.
Yeah, so like, you heard it, and it blew up on there. I was actually watching the Robbie Lawler pay-per-view.
And you were probably like, what the hell?
and he came out, and I wasn't paying attention. I just saw CM Punk, and mm-hmm. that he was talking, and it was like, da-da-da-da, I'm going to UFC. And so I'm not really paying attention for a moment. And so I'm like, oh, he's going to be a broadcaster for UFC.
Right, like or an announcer.
Like,
or,
okay,
know.
Like, he did that announcing stint on WWE, like,
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
He'll broadcast
good on the mic.
The play-by-play in fights. Oh, yeah. That'll be pretty cool, and everything. Yeah. And then they're all like, what weight class, and everything, and he's like, oh, I'm not too sure, and I'm like, wait, he's fighting?
Yeah.
Yes! He's gonna be so beaten, he's gonna get massacred, like, what weight is he going to go at? Like, 205? It's like, oh, sorry, you're going to die.
Like, yeah, yeah. Like
Daniel Cormier,
people,
like, John
people,
Jones, like, who's
yeah,
he beat you? Like, 185? Oh, okay, yeah. You're going to be going up against those dudes? Like,
yeah, like, because he's too tall, right? So, like, he has to be, like, is he considered a heavyweight then? Like, if he was...
I think at his natural weight, he would probably be light heavy. Like
light heavy, okay. Yeah, because he's kind of a lanky character. So, I mean, and he might get in, like, some really good shape. Like, his wrestling shape is not going to work.
Yeah,
like,
he's going to be
barely
middleweight.
Yeah,
like,
he barely was in shape. When he was in the WWE, he was barely in shape. Like, you know, he didn't look like... Even someone like Randy Orton, when he slimmed down and, you know, he was less roidy, Randy Orton had, like, a clear-cut look to him, you know? Like, he had, like, that Bruce Lee type of, like, fiber-looking cut guy. CM Punk has never looked... in shape. he's always looked like he's hitting the gym, but he stops midway, so to
I'm
speak.
Built to go, not for show. Look. He has that very, like, 80s wrestler look to him.
Yeah, which I think is,
like, NWA wrestler, like.
Which I think is why he worked, like, in wrestling it works to look at someone like that, because there's a precedent. You know, like, there's these wrestlers that, I mean, even someone like Bray Wyatt, you know, like, before he was Bray, he was Husky Harris, like, you bought into him, because he looked like an old-school wrestler. So you were like, whatever, you know, doesn't matter.
He's got these, like, jacked arms, and then he's
does,
like a
though.
Big dude. Like,
yeah. Yeah, nowadays, like, his arms are massive. Like, that's why I buy into him sometimes, when he just chucks someone down. Like, he does that weird, like, choke slam. But it's not a choke slam.
A legitimately tough dude. Like,
yeah, he looks like he could beat you up in a bar fight.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Sure.
Punk in MMA. Like, I'm a big fan of the guy. I love the guy in wrestling. I'm giving him a shot. You know, with his writing thing, because I know he likes comics, so I know that he understands, like, storytelling and all that. So I'm willing to give him a chance. For MMA, I'm not rooting for him, but I'm not rooting against him. I'm going in there. If anything, Dana White earned a viewer for whenever it is that he's going to have a fight. Because I'm curious. Like, I have to see this.
He got an extra pay-per-view buy out of me, for sure.
Right, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
I'll usually just watch, like, Cormier fights, Roy McDonald fights, and Ronda Rousey fights. Like,
right, like, if Brock Lesnar went back today... Right.
Oh, I'd buy the shit out of that pay-per-view.
Right. Well, this is where I'm gonna go. If Brock Lesnar today, like, if tomorrow they said Brock Lesnar is gonna have a fight in
February, right? But he's still the WWE champion. I still wouldn't buy it. Like, I still would be like, eh, I could skip it. I'll watch it on YouTube. Punk in an MMA fight, I have to see this. Because I already know what I'm going to expect from Brock. There's a precedent. He was a champ. He had good fights. He had bad fights, but he had good fights as well. I need to see if Punk is going to get massacred or if he's actually going to fight and win or barely make it. Like, I need to see this with my own eyes because I'm not going to believe it.
If Punk even
survives,
draws the fight to, like, a decision,
mm-hmm.
I will be flabbergasted.
Surprised. Right, like, you'll be like, yeah. So, again, I have to see this. And then there was this whole side thing of, like, the Green Ranger wanting to fight him. Tommy.
Jason David Frank.
Yeah. That came out of fucking nowhere.
I think Jason David Frank just likes to, like, find publicity where he can.
Yeah, you know, he's got to make a living. But at least he has MMA training, and doesn't he have a record?
Well, he's actually got a fairly decent record.
Right, he has, like, 10 or so fights under him.
Yeah, I think he's, like, 8-2 or something like that.
Yeah.
He fought at light heavyweight, though. I mean...
Which is what Punk would just potentially
just
be.
Physically... He's a much bigger guy than Punk is, though. Like,
yeah. I mean,
pretty big dude. Like,
yeah.
It wouldn't be a fair fight if they really.
Well, but again, we haven't seen, and this is where, like, caution to the wind, so to speak, is. Punk hasn't chosen a gym. Like, he hasn't chosen a gym. We know he's trained with the Gracies before in jiu-jitsu and all that, but he hasn't chosen a gym. We have no idea what weight class he's going to be in. We have no idea what shape he's going to be in when he actually finishes whatever training he's going to do. Because, like, right now, CM Punk looks like CM Punk. I've been in my couch for a couple of months.
He looks a lot skinnier than he has.
He looks skinnier because, you know, he's probably, you know, taking it easy. But
yeah.
And he doesn't have to deal with, like, the WWE look and you know the road, you know, the schedule that they have to go, the arduous fucking schedule. So maybe he'll be in a better shape. Maybe he'll be in shape that will be like, hey, he looks like he might be able to, you know, go a few rounds. I don't know. All I know is that I need to see this fight when it happens. I'm very, very interested in seeing how the quote unquote best in the world of in wrestling is gonna do and I like how humble he's being about the whole thing. He's like, I'm not saying I'm going to win. You know, I'm not saying I'm going to do good. I just need to do this. Like, I think that's, like, the quote.
There's a chance
that he just
I might
wants
fall flat on my face.
Yeah. There's a chance. There's a good... Actually, he says there's a good chance. Like, he's pretty much, like, admitting, like, I'm probably going to get my ass kicked. But he has to do it for whatever reason.
So, just has that thing inside him where he wants to, you know, test himself against the toughest
yeah.
in the world.
Which, yeah, I can respect that. Because, honestly, if I was him, if I was CM Punk, and I walked out with however much money I walked out with a WWE, and I had, like, this nice little Marvel gig, and, you know, a DC gig, and, you know, whatever else they're offering him, I would take those. I wouldn't go to the world of MMA and get my ass kicked. Like, what if he freaking dies or gets injured to the point, you know, gets injured to the point where he can't, like, function
gets his
anymore.
Arm broken in half.
Yeah. Oh, can't right now, CM.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I'm kind of looking at it from the MMA fighter's perspective. Like, I wouldn't want to take the fight with CM Punk. Like, no matter what weight class he chooses, if mm-hmm. I was, like, a ranked fighter, I wouldn't want to take the fight against CM Punk at all because it would feel like too much of a circus show. Like,
yeah.
There would be nothing to gain because you wouldn't really move up in rank. Like, it would just be kind of like getting your name a little more recognized because you'd be on this big fight that a lot of people would be watching. But, like, you wouldn't move up in rank. You wouldn't be paid nearly as much as him, even though you're fucking guaranteed to beat the shit out of him.
Right.
You wouldn't be able to, you know, get respect if you win. And, like,
right.
God forbid, like, that puncher's chance happens and he knocks you out. You'd be the dude who lost to CM Punk.
Right.
Unless CM Punk were to win and then win a second fight. Because, like,
right.
if he won on, like, a puncher's luck or, like, mm-hmm. you know, a lucky kick or something like that.
Yeah.
And then got the crap beat out of him in his next fight, it would just be like, oh, lucky hit.
Yeah, yeah, he one hit wonder in the MMA world, which exactly. I think would be more than what CM Punk thought he was going to be anyway. Because, again, he sounds extremely humble about this. And, you know, we're used to him being kind of asshole-ish, you know, kind of dickish. Like, out when he's in character or out of character, he's always been kind of like... He's hard to like. I understand a lot of people don't like him because of the way he presents himself, but at the same time, I agree with what Stone Cold says, that if you don't think you're the best in the business and you don't want to be like in the main event and all that, then you shouldn't be in the business. Like, if you want to be a curtain jerker, then why are you even there?
I've always liked Stone Cold's aspect on that and everything. Like, if you're not here to be the champion,
then you shouldn't be there. Yeah. Like
exactly.
When I would, daydream, like, you know how, I'm sure you've had this, especially you were an actual wrestler in high school. Like, you did Olympic wrestling. And well, I'm sure
not,
you.
Not Olympic. But
well, what is it? Greco wrestling. Amateur Greco-Roman. There you go. Yes. That's what I meant. Collegiate. Thank you. Yeah. Not a. you met Kurt Angle. No. But. He trained that jump. No. So, even you probably, you know, had, like, daydreams of, like, being a wrestler, like a WWE wrestler. And I can't imagine you daydreaming about being, like, the guy who opens the show. Like if you daydream about being a wrestler, you daydream about, like, closing the show. You daydream about doing promos to become the champ, or you are the champ, you know? You don't think of, like, oh, I'm going to be in a shitty, like, story that opens the show and, like... I do, like, mid-card for, like, a few years. Like, no one thinks that. No one wants to.
I'll eventually go in, and I'm going to be on NXT. And be the workhorse. I'm going to get through there. And then I'll eventually be able to, you know, get a small intercontinental run. But I'm going to rub somebody the wrong way. They're going to bump me down. Bump me down again. And I'll have to work my way back up. But then one day... I will be in the third match at WrestleMania, and then I'll retire.
Exactly, which is why I agree with Punk, like, in the sense of that, especially when he was the champion, he was not put in the main event slot. Like, I know he was, you know, he still had to play his role. He wasn't, like, the main draw at the time. I get that. But if he's the champ and he's not close in the show, then I don't get it. Like, right now we have a champ that's not even close in the show. Because he's not there. Like, Punk was there. They just chose not to. So, like, I can see why he would get pissed. Like, I would be, if I was in his position, I'd be pissed too. Like, I wouldn't have walked out. Like, I don't think I would have had the balls to walk out. And I mean, he knew something that we didn't when he walked out. That this is why he managed to, in the podcast, he mentioned the whole, what was the quote? The no complete clause is written on a paper, you know, that's no more worth than, and I can't remember that.
It was basically no complete clause. It was that the contracts aren't worth the paper they're written on.
Because
he said you can't have a contract independent contractor.
Like, yeah, that's what it is. Because that's one of those things that wrestlers have been mentioning for a long, long time, that wrestlers aren't part of they're not part of the WWE per se. They're independent contractors. And so there's certain things contractually that they can't do. And apparently, that's something that I thought the Punk situation brought to light, that apparently all these people that did the no complete clauses, they could have competed. They didn't have a good lawyer enough. Like, Punk even mentioned, like,
I think it's not the no-compete clause. I think the no-compete clause is still pretty firm that you can't wrestle
He mentioned something about it being worthless. Like, apparently his lawyer figured out that it was worthless. Legally.
Wow.
I'll listen to it again, and, you know, next time we talk about Punk, I'll try to remember. But yeah, like, the way he worded it.
So when he's unconscious, we'll talk about it.
Yeah. Next time. Yeah, when he. No, it'll be before that, because Lord knows that fight won't happen for like a good 6-7 months.
Oh, we're probably looking at like November.
Yeah, yeah. So it's going to be like almost a year. Like, cause I know, you know, boxing and MMA, you know, preparations for a fight are arduous. You know, it's a long time. It's not like wrestling where it's like, oh, we're going to go wrestle next month at the pay-per-view, like this big match.
That's why I've had such a hard time becoming an MMA fan. I've become in the last couple of years much more involved in MMA, you know, oddly to most of my MMA fan friends, to this, it's mostly because of Ronda Rousey. Like,
right.
I think Ronda Rousey's really cool and a really good fighter, so like I get jazzed to watch her fights.
Right.
But I'm not that guy who's like just gonna like show up, watch that one fight, and then leave. I'm gonna watch all the fights.
Yeah, yeah, the entire card.
And then I get involved in, you know, the world of MMA, and I enjoy seeing these other fights and everything, but like Ronda Rousey was the one where I was like, I want to watch her fight. So then I discovered others like Daniel Cormier, like Rory McDonald, like Robbie Lawler, and so on and so forth. And came into that, and now I'm seeing these other cool fights and becoming more involved in it. But with WWE, you can say, I'm a fan of WWE, I love John Cena, or I love Randy Orton, or whatever. You're right. Going to see that guy wrestle pretty regularly. You're going to see his matches, and you're going to be entertained. Like, you're always going to be able to say, I enjoy seeing that. There are those once-a-year guys where you're like, okay, I'm going to see Brock a couple times. I'm going to see Undertaker at WrestleMania. Stuff like that. And that's fine.
I'm okay with the special attraction, but the special attraction wrestler. I'm okay with that.
But like UFC, it's like, well, I want to watch, you know, one of those four guys that I do like, but they're only going to be fighting on like two different cards over the whole year. So
So it's a completely different world.
So I'm not watching
world.
That much UFC. Like,
yeah, and it's the same with boxing. And I think that's why some of the fights in boxing have these like big, you know how like in wrestling they always say the big fight feel, which is really like from boxing where they have the big fight feel because, you know, they have these long waits. Like, they'll announce a main event like an hour or a year in advance, which is really, I really liked what they did with The Rock and Cena where they announced it. I just don't like that there was no build up for the whole year. It was kind of like they announced it, they did like three things talking about it, and then it wasn't until like the last couple of months, like 3 months before the actual fight, that they started hyping it.
Well, they had the tag match and then the Survivor Series match.
Yeah, which again, it was a couple of months before. It was like 3-4 months that they actually started hyping it. But I mean, there was like a 6-month period where John Cena did not talk about The Rock.
Yeah.
Like, there was nothing going on. You know?
That's true.
Yeah.
But like the thing with boxing that's kind of sad is there's only one match that can be announced that's going to have a big fight feel. Like,
right.
Like, they'll have some pay-per-view buys and Showtime boxing and all sorts of stuff for other fights, but, like, really, like, all anybody wants is Pacquiao versus Mayweather.
Like, yeah, that's like, the match right now. Yeah,
There's other great fighters. Amir Khan, like, I've heard nobody talking about Amir Khan fights unless they're, like, really big boxing fans.
Right.
Adrian Broner, like, he went from being the undercard, like, match on a Pacquiao paper or on a Mayweather pay-per-view to being the main event on, like, a random Showtime, like, not even pay-per-view boxing match.
Right.
Tons and tons of other... Vladimir Klitschko, like, he's the heavyweight champion for years now. I think it's been...
Is that that Russian guy that's, like, super
married,
huge that no one can beat?
He's huge. He's married to Hayden Panettiere, like...
Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about.
And he's been undefeated for the last, like, 10 years or whatever. Like,
no one talks about him.
His matches where he's defending the title are not only not on pay-per-view, they're not even broadcast in America. Like, half of them are, like, just broadcast in, like, Russia or whatever.
Which, again, it comes down to Vince McMahon knowing how to promote and boxing promoters just not knowing when they have money. Like, that guy, that Russian dude, whatever, that guy married to Hayden, that I would be promoting the shit out of that guy.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Like he would be, I would be calling like Showtime, HBO, you know, DirecTV, pay-per-view, whatever. I would be like, guys, we need to televise this. Like, this
that
needs to be televised.
By all rights, the Brock Lesnar of boxing. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I'm looking at a picture and I remember him now. I remember when he came to, like, yeah, it was like 10 years ago. He came around and people were talking about this monster boxer that no one could beat, and he still is unbeaten.
I don't know that he's unbeaten, like, his entire career, but he hasn't lost in about 10 years.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's insane. Like, this guy should be... You imagine this guy, like, if he was... Like, there was, like, a wrestling equivalent to this guy. Like, he'd be bigger than Taker. Yeah, he'd be the Bruno Sammartino of wrestling.
Well, I mean,
or
dude,
boxing.
He's 6 foot six.
Like, yeah, he's huge.
Huge guy. And he's going out there and just... devastating his opponents.
Yeah.
It's
because I remember the first one of his first fights, like the person he fought against was in the same weight class but looked like a child next to him, like, because there was nobody that big at the time. I remember this guy now.
Yeah, he has not lost a fight since 2004.
Jesus. Wow.
So yeah, exactly 10 years since he's lost a match.
Yeah, and Vladimir Klitschko, yeah.
And he's had several matches. I mean,
yeah, he has 66 fights to his name, 63 wins, 53 wins by KO, which is just insane. And only three losses. Only three losses to his name.
53 people put to the ground.
Yeah, yeah. No, only 10 decisions in his entire career. Actually, no, not even, because he lost three times. Well... Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a big dude and
super heavyweight and
like,
gold.
It's a
he
name
won,
you know, but like he's not even on pay-per-view. Yeah. Meanwhile, CM Punk has no fight experience. Marquee name. Like,
yeah.
Like that shows that UFC is able to, you know, promote things. I mean,
oh,
their promotion for this Jones v. Cormier like grudge match,
mm-hmm.
It has been outstandingly well done, and I'm really excited to watch this fight. I think UFC is on the cusp. Like they keep being the big thing and drawing, but they're finally on the cusp of being monstrously successful in everything.
Yeah.
Like ubiquitous.
I'm reading here a stat. He is the second longest reigning heavyweight champion of all time. With the second most successful career grand total title defenses with 22, including his super title recognition. He has 22 title defenses as a boxer.
Yep.
Holy hell.
Klitschko?
Yeah.
Yeah, Klitschko.
I am looking at his, yeah, this is, yeah, Joe Lewis is the closest, like the only one that's above him. And he's about to beat him if someone doesn't get in the ring and beat this guy.
Because
Joe Lewis was 11 years, 8 months, and 8 days. That was his reign.
Look at his age, though. I mean, Klitschko 38. Is 38.
Mm-hmm.
He's the same age as, what, Mayweather? I think Mayweather's 37,
yeah.
38.
Yeah.
Like, he's got another...
Another 10 years in him.
I want to 10. 48's a little old.
Never mind. Boxing.
Slugging it out,
yeah.
But... he's still got a few years of being able to go in there and box. Like, we could very well see this guy retire as champion.
As a champion. Like, what happens then? I don't think I've seen what happens during, like...
Just title becomes declared vacant.
Oh, that's right, that's right. Yeah. I think, oh, okay, never mind, I remember now. In the 90s, something like that happened. I think I have a vague memory of a title being, vacant in boxing that people were contending for.
I feel like Lennox Lewis vacated the title.
Is that what Lennox Lewis?
I believe
was it before or after Holyfield?
It would have been after Holyfield.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay, because he beat that ass. Fucking crushed. But yeah, I'm looking at this guy. This dude is like scary. Like, because not only is he, like you said, he's 6'6", he's, like, swole as hell. Like, he's pure muscle, and that is scary on a guy that big. In a boxing ring. Yikes.
All right, so since we're talking about scary boxers and different fighters and everything, so most likely they've announced that we'll be seeing CM Punk fighting at welterweight or middleweight.
Mm-hmm.
So if he drops down to 185, that's already a pretty sizable cut, but he's been saying most likely middleweight. Then he's going to be in the territory of Chris Weidman as is the champion there. Yeah. But going all the way down to like the top 10, you've got Chris Weidman, Anderson Silva, Ronaldo Souza, Lyoto the Dragon Machida, Vitor Belfort, Luke Rockhold, Yoel Romero, Tim Kennedy, Jajard Mozazi, Michael Bisping, and CB Dolloway. Like, even if he goes in against CB Dolloway, like, that's a name I know, and I'm not a big,
and probably has a big enough record, like, well over 10 fights, you know?
Yes, CB Dolloway is 6-7 in the UFC.
Oh my god. Like, which, again, is like
no, 16-7, sorry.
Yeah, 16-7, yeah, I was gonna say, like, 16-7, which is a really good record, like, in the MMA world, like, a lot of people are like, yeah, this kind of shit, it's like, no, like, in MMA, you have 50-50.
Yeah, in MMA, it's very rare to see that,
double digit, like, and zero. Yeah.
Like, perfect record and everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, even John Jones, like, he's had that one loss, which I think was actually like a
decision.
DQ, I think it was.
Oh, was it?
The only undefeated guy that I know of is Daniel Cormier. Light heavyweight, number one contender. He's 15-0, but I mean, he was a Olympic wrestler contender and everything. Like, this dude was the man and everything. So we're going to be seeing CM Punk go against these kind of contenders. They are beasts all around him. So even if he steps down a little bit further, there's still Robbie Lawler, Johnny Hendricks, Rory McDonald, tons of guys. So
yeah.
He's got his work cut out for him. So good luck, CM Punk.
I'm looking at like ratings, like the highest ratings for UFC on Fox. Velasquez versus Dos Santos. This was in November 12, 2011. The rating was 3.1 with 5.7 viewers. That's like, that's almost exactly like wrestling numbers. Yeah, it's wrestling numbers, like, but for, you know, one event. Like I wonder how much someone like Punk, you know, who has like that built-in audience, you know, because there is such a thing as like people who don't watch MMA at all but watch wrestling a lot. Like myself, like I only watch MMA like once in a blue moon. Like, it better be like a really interesting fight for me to even consider watching, or like I'm morbidly curious about something, aka CM Punk getting in the ring in the octagon. You know, like what? So.
What if his first fight's against Alberto El Patron?
Oh my god, how funny would that be? Because Alberto only has, what, 3-5 matches to his name?
I think he's only got about 5, and they were all in, like,
so,
5.
Yeah, so I mean, it wouldn't be like it would be as close as fair as you could have it, you know? Because otherwise you're going to have to bring another guy that's an amateur that just got a contract, you know? Like, and I sincerely doubt that they're going to put Punk in a... I mean, I don't think they're going to put him in a main event, but I don't think they're going to make him...
He can't close the show.
No, he can't close the show, but no. Dana White is not dumb. Dana White is a promoter.
He can't put him in...
He can't put him in the first match of the night.
Five. He can't open. He's got to be in, like, match 3.
Yeah, he's got to be in the... He's got to be mid-card as soon as... Yeah.
He's got to be match 3. He'll be, you know, marquee name and everything, because they'll probably have 2 titles on the line. They'll have something like, you know, heavyweight title, and then
Ronda Rousey,
like bantamweight title or something like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like third main event and everything, like CM Punk versus probably somewhere like a 6th to 15th ranker.
Yeah.
Type thing. But I mean, looking at those middleweight names, eesh, he would get rolled.
Yeah, I know, yeah. And again, the reason why we're saying he's going to get rolled, and I'm agreeing with you that he's probably going to get rolled, is because, again, we have nothing on him. He has no matches. We don't know of any other than, like, his we know he has Muay Thai training, but, I mean, that doesn't mean anything. Training doesn't mean you're good at it. It just means you have training, you know?
Especially since he's admitted that he's never sparred before.
Exactly. Like
he has no belt in, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or anything like that. There's a lot to be in the UFC. Like, most guys have to have, like, a ton of, like, gritty amateur MMA fights before they can become anywhere near a name in UFC. Like, right. You have to have that springboard from a different form of, like, athletic background. Like Brock Lesnar, he made the jump after being NCAA champion, then went to WWE and everything, and had a very physical, beating-based fight style. Like, CM Punk's fight style in WWE didn't look like a real fight style.
He did strikes, but for the most part, he was kind of like a cruiserweight sometimes.
Yeah, knees, arms, jumps. Like, what's he gonna do? His big, like, top rope splash?
Oh man, or something?
Like,
yeah, do the kick from the cage? Do like the Cody Rhodes kick?
Do the running bulldog?
Oh my god. If he does a running bulldog and connects, I would mark out like a child.
If he does a running bulldog and connects, I will buy you a drink and and celebrate right alongside you. Like,
because that would be insane.
Even if he landed a running bulldog, the other
he's
dude
still
like,
gonna get hurt.
Ripped his legs down and then knocked him unconscious, I'd still be all like, that dude landed a running bulldog on you, dude. Like, go kill yourself.
Like, like, how did that happen?
That's like playing Street Fighter, getting hit by, like, the entire Sakura Otoshi or something. Like.
Oh, yeah. Like, unless it's Combo Dan, yeah.
they just, like, come in and land you with Akuma's Ultra 2. Like, just kill yourself, bro. It doesn't matter.
Ultra 2, oh my god.
it doesn't matter if you won the match after that. Like, you still got hit
like,
by
you
it.
Still, yeah, you got hit with Dan's Go Hadouken.
Dan hits you with the Go Hadouken. Like, what are you
doing? On the other side of the screen.
He full screened a Hadouken. You jumped into it.
But yeah, like I said, I am looking forward to it for all the wrong reasons. Like, I'm very curious.
So, Punk, may the force be with you.
For real. Like, from the bottom of her heart, may the force be with you. Please don't die. Don't be the one guy that's gonna die in the middle of the ring.
Yeah, please don't die in
there. Because that would suck. That's gonna be his gift to humanity. He's gonna get rid of USC by dying, like, be a martyr. it becomes illegal.
You just see, like, AJ Lee, like, in an interview and everything. It's like, they didn't know he was fighting with a staph infection. They should have never let it happen.
I blame Vince McMahon. It all comes back to WWE. Like, oh, shit. Like, it's just a shitstorm.
It all ends with the Vince McMahon versus Dana White match in the Octagon.
This is a very, like, this is very, like, Empire Strikes Back ending that we're building up here. Just sad.
We're putting too much wrestling booking in the UFC right now.
CM Punk has become the Han Solo of this piece. Like, he's about to be frozen in carbonite.
Really is.
Taken to, you know, Dana White's palace.
So that he can be dropped off the Pepsi plunge. So, nice. Before we close out this show tonight, we're going to have a way back match of the week, calling it back from the long, long time ago. And since Punk was the co-feature of this one, I thought it would be apropos to have CM Punk be the feature of this match of the week. So I would say that the match of the week is CM Punk versus Ryback in the Hell in a Cell.
Oh my god. Yes. Hell in a Cell 2012?
2012. Faced Ryback in the Hell in a Cell. Pretty brutal match, both of them back and forth. Mm-hmm. Lots of cool stuff happens throughout it. It's a pretty hard-hitting, well done out match and everything. And it's come out that CM Punk absolutely hates working with Ryback. So I thought that would be quite interesting to watch it with that mindset.
Was that the first time that was the debut, or the debut, I'm using our quotations, of Brad Maddox.
That was the big...
The reveal when, you know, he was the referee that officiated the match. And I remember they actually had him play a referee for a while.
Yep.
Before that happened. Like, I don't know if that was a plan, like, that they had this developmental character that they were like, oh, let's put him as a referee and see, you know, and let him be there and then do the turn. Or if it was just kind of like he was a referee and they're like, hey, kid, yeah, I want to be on screen persona for a little bit.
You never know with the WWE.
I don't know.
This was pretty big for Ryback, too, because this was right when Cena went down, so they needed another main event guy to go against Punk.
Yeah, and I remember this is when the Feed Me More thing was really popular.
Look off, I mean, huge.
It came back recently, like right now, Feed Me More is like back, but this is when it was at a fever pitch, and you know, people were like, you know, Punk was, this is halfway, if not over, or like he's well over his 6-month period as a champion here, right?
Oh yeah,
like he's been a champ for a while. Yeah, because he already had Heyman for
a little while. He's already had Heyman. He's gone through Cena. He's gone through a few others.
Jericho,
Batista, and Jericho. Batista,
yeah.
And
Orton.
Yep.
He had Orton.
And now Ryback is his big opponent, and you know, it even led on, you know, the following month he was supposed to face against Ryback in a TLC match.
Right, the New Year's.
And that ended up being the
debut of the Shield.
They came in and they did the 3-on-3 against Team Hell No and Ryback in that TLC match right after that.
Right.
So I mean, it led. This match in the Hell in a Cell led to many other things and really broke out in large amounts of places.
Now that I think about it, yeah, the CM Punk and Ryback, like from it, you know, a lot of things kind of like birth it over. Not quite, you know, how Hulkamania came from, you know, the Sheik being the Sheik and being the champion and being like this great heel. So here it's kind of like the Shield existed because CM Punk had a long reign, and this was the hero that people were getting behind at the moment, because, you know, they weren't getting behind Cena, they weren't getting behind Ryback at this time. And I remember there was a couple of times where Ryback and Cena were in the same, like, card, and Ryback was getting pops, like, louder
Ryback
than Cena.
Ryback was big, and I mean, he's starting to get that again with the face movement and everything.
Yeah.
They're understanding what they did right and what they did wrong last time, and
yeah, turn him and heel,
really driving it.
Horrible mistake.
But
or maybe not. So
I
much.
Mean, there were many points where, like, I was like, I can completely believe that Ryback is going to be WWE champion. Like,
oh yeah, oh especially going against someone like Punk. Oh yeah,
I don't usually like big man on big man matches, but I could definitely see Ryback versus Lesnar being a title fight on that road to WrestleMania type thing.
Yeah.
Like I think I
could see that. I mean, I wouldn't want to give Ryback the win just because, you know, of all the things that could mean. Because Brock Lesnar right now has like this, like whoever beats him is, you know.
Ryback wouldn't beat him. The only people who can beat Ryback Lesnar. The only people who could beat Lesnar and take the title are Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan. Like, in my opinion, it's those two. That's it.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's the only two that can take the title,
and no one would even. Yeah, there would be no complaints from the fans or anyone really. It'd be like, okay, yeah, I'm okay with this.
Yeah,
nice little swerve there with the Hell in a Cell, by the way.
I thought that would be fun.
I was like, what?
Well, thank you for joining us. As always, I am Cyan of Flame.
And I'm Straw Hat Regan.